Miss Lane.
What we have here is a man who, on a lovely September morning,
touch of early autumn chill in the sweet New England air, some sugar maple leaves already turning red under a crisp blue sky,
mislaid his mind. The man?
Catholic, heterosexual, Caucasian bachelor with brown eyes, thinning brown hair combed over, athletic, despite his narrow, even frail frame.
Believed he knew why this was happening to him, yet his beliefs,
not religious beliefs, but having to do with his mind no longer working after some four decades of functioning just fine, insofar as he could tell,
were evolvingly suspect. Where once he was a sociable,
neighbors often invited him to dinner, during which he told hilarious, if familiar, jokes, and never failed to help clear the dishes.
And affectionate.
His longtime girlfriend, while married to one of these very neighbors, was as devoted to him as a mother of three children could manage to be.
Now he was isolated, bitter, whereas before he was dependable,
had been with the same accounting firm for 15 years, was the star shortstop of their interleague softball team, blessed with an infallible throwing arm and perfect aim.
He now became not just unreliable, but entirely unpredictable. Never in his life having missed a day of work, he called in sick.
Head cold, he said.
On the last Tuesday of the month, then drew the curtains in his modest house.
Two-bedroom cape, dove gray siding.
And began what would by week's end come to be known as...
I'm sorry, I lost my place.
Right there. Alias.
That's right. Alias, thus by local law enforcement.
The siege. Okay, tell you what. Never in his life having missed a day of work, he called in sick.
Head cold, he said.
On the last Tuesday of the month, then drew the curtains of his modest house.
Two-bedroom cape, dove gray siding.
And began what would by week's end come to be known as...
Alias thus by local law enforcement.
The siege. During the first hours which slowly amassed in the days, the man took no incoming calls.
The man did actually ring a few times on Wednesday,
but started telephoning people who didn't understand or care about or why his mind was suddenly wrong. These
outgoing
calls were repetitious, tedious, diffuse, and minimally articulate grievings punctuated by laughter.
In turn, sometimes punctuated by weeping.
It didn't help that they were made to people whom he had never met and who hung up on him before he had the chance either to explain himself or apologize. Many of those who were treated to a minute
or so
of his ravings thought that he must surely be drunk.
Stinking plaster.
Not knowing that he didn't drink.
Indeed was a teetotaler and vegetarian with a weakness for wheatgrass juice.
Jeez. By Thursday mid-afternoon, his firearms quietly surfaced.
No one would have ever guessed he had owned such a cache of weapons. Certainly not his lover, whom he took hostage that same evening when she dropped by, as she always did on Thursdays, to make love with him.
And by early Friday morning, the siege had begun.
The frantic husband having notified the local police of his wife's absence, and the man having himself also placed a call to the accounting firm with his list of demands.
Once the standoff was in place,
SWAT team and state troopers now on the scene.
The news media showed up with satellite pillars towering over their vans, looking like an ugly flotilla of squat, land-bound boats whose sails were furled. Throughout that long weekend, newscasters,
whom the neighbors would soon enough invite into their living rooms for coffee and to elaborate their thoughts regarding the unfolding situation,
began covering this,
now renamed,
hostage crisis. The man who mislaid his mind would himself watch them interviewed on his television and agree with most of what they had to say.
He was always such a considerate neighbor, such a nice, quiet man, etc.
All of which he told his girlfriend,
who did not respond because the duct tape he used to mummify her head rendered her mute.
Gentle wind rustled in the turning oaks and birches as a glorious harvest moon,
full, brightly amber,
rose above the rooftops down the street. Now, the girlfriend's husband,
who for many years had hired the man's accounting firm to prepare his taxes,
held on to a fervent belief that his wife was not, as the media alleged, her captor's lover, but was the victim of a random kidnapping.
Wrong place at the wrong time, he told his three children and anyone else who would listen.
Because this madman,
as the husband now referred to him,
had no next of kin,
inherited the house from his parents, deceased.
The negotiator,
brought in by the police to talk about the talk him out of harming his hostage,
asked the woman's husband,
who had killed the man, who had liked the man, even considered him a friend before he turned into a fucking psycho,
to think about making a personal appeal in the hopes of bringing this unfortunate misunderstanding,
as it were,
to a swift and nonviolent end. If handled properly, a According to the
thick-shouldered yet somehow dainty
trained professional, suspect contact with someone familiar and direct involved with the situation can,
on occasion,
change the hostile dynamics and help defuse said situation. When the husband,
whose face was crimson and own fuse short on the best of days,
asked if this meant he was supposed to fucking bait this fucking psycho to release his wife, the negotiator,
flanked by serious men in bulletproof vests,
answered that yes, in essence, if he wanted his wife back,
in one piece,
a personal plea was the best way to proceed. This would have been on Sunday morning, this request from the authorities, who'd been for 2 days stymied by the intransigence, not to mention sporadic incoherence, of their perpetrator. Before patching the bereft,
sullen
husband through to the man,
whose line was now restricted, thanks to local telephone company cooperation, such that incoming and outgoing calls were confined to contact between the principals,
he,
the husband,
was briefed not to,
under any circumstances,
use incendiary language,
fucking psycho madman,
with the armed and dangerous
alleged
offender holed up in the house. The media, having by this time confirmed that the husband's wife was seen on multiple occasions entering and exiting the modest gray home of the man, who now held her inside,
presumably against her will,
made some requests of their own of the upset husband.
Interview solicitations, as well as appeals for recent photographs of the woman,
which he refused,
using peppery language with them too, fucking vampires that they were, etc.
He,
the husband,
packed the three children off to stay with their loving grandmother,
paternal,
until the storm passed. Alone now in his own modest cape,
a very pale blue,
the husband had to admit to himself,
and to his God,
that things weren't looking good, that it seemed increasingly possible,
undeniable in fact,
that his fucking wife had hung the horns on him with this fucking madman, and that he was from this moment forward going to look like,
be,
a fucking laughingstock.
Not just in town, but in the eyes of a watchful nation.
Oh, I love a watchful nation. I'm sorry. He took leave of absence from the bank, where he had worked without incident for a decade as assistant branch manager, and retained a lawyer
who agreed to represent him on contingency,
and also withdrew behind the drawn curtains of his house. The magnificent autumn weather continued all the while to hold various migratory warblers,
some red starks perched in a lilac, a chickadee in the honeysuckle,
filling the air with song. Yes,
to be sure.
There were signs of impending breakdown the week before Tuesday dawn, and the man,
who currently paced back and forth in his living room with a Browning BDA 380 clenched in both hands, listening to the dismal moans of his girlfriend, whom he had handcuffed to the radiator,
mislaid his mind. On the Friday prior, for instance, he had arrived home from work and drawn a hot bath, then climbed into the water without having removed his clothes.
His watch and loafers were ruined.
An act that probably has something,
everything,
to do with the disagreement,
brawl,
he'd had with his girlfriend the night before. Rather than making love as they did every Thursday evening,
a routine they had followed for 9 years,
the girlfriend announced,
cheeks flushed, hazel eyes averted, one slim hand fidgeting with her wavy, henned hair,
that they needed to talk. This was, in the opinion of the man, never a promising prelude to an evening.
The weekly 2 hours, during which time she supposedly attended a Bible studies group, ladies only,
that stressed before them. Indeed, the last time his girlfriend intoned this need to talk was a year before when she presented him with an assortment of foil packets containing various condoms.
Lambskin, French ticklers, rubbed, ribbed, ultra-thins.
Then told him that from now on their intercourse would have to be protected. He knew at once why his girlfriend wanted to have him strap on these
goddamn
rubbers, just as it had nothing to do with some fear of sexually transmitted diseases.
Both the man and his girlfriend were good about being tested during annual checkups with their mutual doctor.
Sorry, man. It had everything to do with her unwillingness to bear the man any more children and raise them under her husband's roof. Love making with one of these
ridiculous
rubbers,
the man told her that night the year before,
it was like trying to do brain surgery while wearing a thick pair of gardener's gloves,
or some such metaphor that got him nowhere.
The girlfriend reminded him that not only was sex not brain surgery, but
more to the point,
that she had for all these years,
at the man's insistence,
required her husband to wear a condom whenever they copulated,
a rare enough event in the wallpapered bedroom of the married couple, and thus such a rarer miracle yet, the advent of 3 offspring, whom the husband wrongly attributed to serendipitous leakage and fertile sperm.
So if this was what she wanted, it was only fair of him to comply. The man argued to no avail, as his girlfriend had excellent and ready responses to his every point. Yes, she agreed, he had always been good about giving her
secret
monthly allowance to help with child support,
which she used instead, for the most part, to build for herself a personal nest egg against the proverbial rainy day, unbeknownst to either boyfriend or husband.
And yes, he had been understanding and supportive of her desire to remain married to her husband.
They had been sweethearts since grade school, and as devout Catholics, didn't believe in divorce.
And it was true that he had not,
very often at least,
expressed jealousy toward her husband or resentment about the children's ignorance of their true paternity, or
even any real marked
rancor with regard to their
singular
circumstances. But at the end of the day, none of this mattered because,
at the end of the day,
she said she wanted no more kids. He acquiesced,
having no viable option.
And their Thursday evening rendezvous continued through winter and spring, much as they always had, the man not wanting to upset what seemed to him,
sanely or not,
basically a good situation, and his girlfriend thinking,
more or less,
along similar lines. Given all this, then, why did she suddenly need to talk last Thursday? Because she was pregnant. You know what? Mm-hmm. It goes downhill from there.